LSU bounces back on the road in a big-time way. The Pelicans make some moves, just not the move. And one of the newest members of the NFL Hall of Fame joins us today, Thursday, February 7th, 2019.
Brunson looking for Doncic again. Got it top of the arc. Thought about the three. Passed it up. Swings it left. And Finney Smith will shoot the three and hit it. A 15-point game for Dorian Finney-Smith. And the Mavericks with a 97-91 lead. A minute 50 remaining.
Randall for three. Good with the left hand. Left of the top of the arc.
That ain't in the paint, but that was sweet. Pels now 55 points off the bench. Julius Randle with 25 of them.
Waters dribbling from left to right hand. Leaned over just outside the mid-circle. And with eight, he'll start to work. Goes to his right. Cut off by Nick Weatherspoon. Four. Gets it to Reed. Three ball left of the arc. Bounces. Goes through. Good. Hit the left side of the rim. Went straight up and spun right through the net. 92-88. Nas Reed with a huge triple. He has 29 points. That's his second three-pointer of the game. And again, just the third for LSU tonight.
Sometimes I'd rather be lucky than good. And that three ball from Naz Reed had, as he said, had a little help from above. He really believed Wade Sims was there helping guide the ball through the net. Whatever it takes, the Tigers get a much-needed, really hard-fought win on the road to improve to 8-1 in SEC play. How about that? Setting up a big showdown Saturday at 1 when the Auburn Tigers of Bruce Pearl comes to Peach Palace. Of course, that game right here on 103.7 The Game. So it was a great day overall for LSU on a Wednesday. Ed Orgeron completes his class, his recruiting class of 2019 with a 25-man class, ranked number 5 nationally, but number 4 in the SEC. LSU had 3 5-star prospects and 11 4-stars. Add it all up, Ed Orgeron thinks he's in pretty good shape. According to 247 Sports, Alabama 1, Georgia 2, Texas 3, Texas A&M 4, LSU number 5. Cody Worsham will join us in just a moment to recap the LSU win. Naz Reed with 29, Trey Waters with 26. They, another game where LSU started off good. Then Mississippi State goes on a 17-0 run. Second half down double digits. Tigers come storming back. Have a chance to win it in regulation. Don't, but seal it in overtime. A terrific, terrific win. The trade deadline has come and gone. And the New Orleans Pelicans still have Anthony Davis in their fold. We'll talk about that and why in the world did the Pelicans trade Nikola Mirotic, and why in the world did they take back Jason Smith? So we'll talk about those deals with Will Guillory of The Athletic. In hour number two, he's only the 5th LSU football player in the history of their program to be elected and inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame. The old Wampus Cat himself, Kevin Mawai, will join us and share his joy with all of us as he will be a part of the NFL Class of 2019. And the Schwab will join us. We'll recap that, you know what. We'll talk about the Hall of Fame class. And what does he think of the New Orleans Saints for next year? What do they need to address to get over the hurdle one more time and get to another Super Bowl in the same venue where they won their first? So, that's what's on docket. My main man, CD, back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios. Yours truly here, Studio 1A, And we're rolling and rolling and rolling. Busy day, big day planned for you and yours. We'll recap LSU's win in Starkville when we return. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. We're on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Come on, stick around.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. And with wall-to-wall TVs, there's no arguing over the remote. Where else are you gonna get all that? Not some boring old man cave, that's for sure. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. 7,500 fans filled Humphrey Coliseum on a Wednesday night. 8 o'clock tip. To see the Mississippi State Bulldogs try to hang a loss on the LSU Tigers, but they were unsuccessful. LSU needs an extra five-minute frame in overtime to win it 92-88. Cody Worsham watched every second of it, tweets all the time about it, studies the film afterwards, breaks it all down, and now he is kind enough to join us here today to talk about it. I can't emphasize it enough, what a huge bounce-back win that was for LSU. 8-1 in the league. Cody, that was impressive, man. Impressive.
Yeah, great win. Mississippi State's a really good team. They're much better than their SEC record at 4-5. As much talent as any roster in the SEC. So for LSU to go down and play the way that they did, particularly in the second half and overtime, I thought it was a really good performance, a really good win. Those are the kinds of games that you have to win if you want to win a conference championship. And LSU's kind of staying in that mix right now, which is good. It's where you want to be at this point in time of the year.
No question about that. All right, I remember texting you saying, okay, I was wrong. I saw some new things in Naz Reid. I wasn't the biggest fan of his, to be perfectly honest with you. He's had some dynamic moments, and he's had a lot of inconsistent moments. I guess that's just what it's like to be in a freshman again. But they don't win that game without him in Starkville. 29 points, 9 rebounds. 10 of 17 shooting. He was terrific in every aspect. I saw some new things with him. And Will Waite says, I don't know why Naz isn't getting more national recognition. He's among the leaders of all freshmen around the country in many statistical categories. So you sold me last night on Naz Reid.
Well, Naz Reid sold himself. He has some, you know, you're not the only one that's questioned just how good Naz had been playing. He's been up and down. He's been a freshman. I think not. This isn't the case with you. I don't think. I think this is more with people who don't watch basketball as much, or maybe they're football fans and baseball fans first, and watch basketball when the team's good. But not all five-star freshmen are created equal. And so when Naz came in and there was all this talk about him being one and done, a lot of people expected him to be Ben Simmons and to put up 18, 10, and 5 every night. Mm-hmm. And that's not Naz's game necessarily. I tried to compare him earlier in the year more to like Jarrell Martin, who came in as a five-star freshman and had good moments and had bad moments. But I think he's actually been a lot better than even Jarrell was. Jarrell was fine as a freshman, but he wasn't near what Naz is right now. If you look at his conference numbers, he's averaging 16 points, 6.5 rebounds, shooting basically 50% from the field, 50% from three, and 85% from the line. I mean, I don't care who you are or what league you play in. If you can put up those kind of numbers, he can play. So he was huge last night. He's getting more confident. He's getting more aggressive. He's more decisive in the post, I think, is the biggest thing.
Yes.
He's making decisions a lot faster when he gets the ball on the block or in that extended post where he likes to play. And he's just being much more decisive and confident. And that's transitioning to good play.
Yeah, good hands. I love his versatility. You know, he's a really good velvety touch type of outside shooter. But I love when he ball fakes and takes that ball to the basket. That's a load and a half. And As a result, 7 of 8 from the free throw line. So I love that he's playing inside. I love that he's playing outside. I love that he's taking the ball to the basket. He's showing an incredible amount of versatility for a kid that's 6'10".
Yeah, the biggest thing with Naz, and this is the biggest thing with the entire team, is just cutting down on those turnovers, because that's the only Achilles heel that LSU has right now. They had some rebounding issues earlier in the year. That's no longer a problem. They've cleaned that up. They're the best offensive rebounding team in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing fine on the defensive glass. Just cleaning up those turnovers. And if you look at the turnover numbers across the country, it doesn't matter what season it is, the young teams are the ones that always turn it over most, and experienced teams are the ones that turn it over least. And so that's just what LSU's dealing with right now, is some youth and some lessons to learn. But what they're doing a good job of is, yeah, they have these stretches where they turn it over a bunch. But, you know, last night in the second half, they only turned it over 4 times in the second half and overtime. That's sustainable. That's where you go from a team that can beat anybody in the country on any given night to a team that is beating any team in the country on any given night.
Was it a direct directive from Will Wade? They only took 11 three-point shots. They scored 58 of their 92 points inside the paint. Of their 92 points, only 9 came from three-point land. So was that a direct kind of a game plan? Look, we're not shooting the ball very well of late from outside. Let's not try and start here on the road. Let's get that thing inside.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I don't think he told them to just take 1-3 in the first half, but I think there was very much an instruction to pound the paint, get it inside. Just look at Tremont Waters. I think he was 10 of 16 on twos last night. Usually when he goes off, it's from the three-point line, and then he adds some layups and some free throws. He was just in attack mode last night with floaters and finishing around the rim. So that was the directive from the top. It was, let's pound the paint. Let's win the game there. That's when LSU is its most efficient. And once they did that in the second half with some consistency, Mississippi State couldn't stop them. And so LSU was able to kind of outscore them and force overtime and then execute overtime and win.
Everybody's going to talk about the 29 from Naz Reid, the 26 and 5 steals and 5 assists from Tremont Waters, and deservedly so. But lurking in the background very quietly, yet again, when he gets minutes, he seems to always get you double-doubles, and that's Cavell Bigby-Williams with 14 and 13 on the glass, including 4 offensive rebounds. When he gets the minutes, boy, he gives you numbers.
Yeah, I think Will Wade said today that when Cavell plays 20 minutes or more, LSU never loses. I'll have to go look at the splits and see what the actual stats say. But yeah, he's a difference maker. Their defensive numbers are elite when he's on the floor. When he's not blocking shots, he's altering shots. He's grabbing rebounds all over the place. And then on offense, he's super efficient. He dunks everything. He's 6 of 6 from the floor. When you get that kind of production on a guy that doesn't need the ball in his hands, you're going to be tough to stop offensively. And he's got such a high motor. I mean, I say this all the time when I talk about Cavell. You ever go watch practice, he wins every single sprint. He does the same in the game. He's always winning every sprint. He's super competitive. He's just a great addition for LSU, and kind of was the missing piece from him last year. They had him last year. They probably a tournament team, and now this year with the increase in talent at other spots, they're not just a tournament team. They're a team that has a chance to make some noise once the tournament rolls around.
Doesn't need the ball to be happy. Perfect 6 for 6 from the floor. He gets your rebounds. Boy, that's the consummate team player that every team needs in this. We're talking with Cody Worsham, the digital media director for LSU Athletics. All right, you're the numbers guy. That was a heck of a quadrant one win, correct? And where does LSU rank in the NAT, the RPI, the KenPom, and whatever else everybody puts together?
Yeah, last I checked, KenPom, they were 22. The net rankings this morning, I think they were 18th, which is a really good spot to be. It was LSU's 4th quadrant one win. And, you know, some of those, when you talk about quadrant one wins, you're talking about a top 25 win at home, a top 50 win at a neutral site, or a top 75 win on the road. So some of those quad one wins kind of float in and out. Like the neutral site win over St. Mary's. St. Mary's is going to hover around 50 all year in the net. They could go up, but that could be one that floats in and out. Arkansas on the road, and Arkansas was kind of floating in and out of the top 75 there for a little while. If that went over state, that's going to stick. That's state 26 in the net right now. They're going to be, you know, anywhere from 25 to 40 at the worst most of the year. So that's going to be a quad one win. And now you're, like I said, you're building a resume not just to get in the tournament. You're talking about trying to get a top 4, top 5 seed where you got a chance to advance. So they're in a good spot. They still have a lot of work to do, but couldn't be in much of a better spot right now.
Well, they got a chance to improve, up it, because you got two quad one opportunities back-to-back with Auburn and with Kentucky. That Greensboro win, that's looking better all the time. They're making some waves this year.
Well, Will Wade, he's a brilliant scheduler, and this year the SoCon is really good. So UNC Greensboro is a good win. Furman's going to be a good win all year. I think that's the only two that they played from the SoCon this year, but I think they got East Tennessee State next year. I mean, that's a good conference if he was a head coach and knows well. So some good scheduling. You schedule teams that they were going to beat, but teams that are going to look good on their resume all season.
I laugh, Cody. Sometimes it's the simplest of things that are the most effective. Out of the timeout, LSU runs a play that has been run on every bitty court, every high school court, where low post man turns his back, goes across, screens the other low post. That low post comes to the ball. LSU kicks it inside to Naz Reid for the bucket and the harm for a three-point opportunity. Simple, the most simplistic play, but effective play, because I don't think State was expecting it.
No, they weren't. LSU's run that play before this year. It's been four or five games since they ran it. And typically what LSU does at the end of the game is they do some kind of screen and roll action. So they'll set a screen for somebody, and then he'll go set the ball screen. Or usually that's what they do, is spread, pick, and roll. And that play that LSU ran kind of sold that action with Cavell Bigby-Williams, and then he flared out of the way. So the whole defense was kind of expecting to settle in for a pick and roll, and all of a sudden Naz Reid's guys, you know, back screened or cross screened by Scott Amaze, who set a phenomenal screen, and Javonte Smart does a perfect pass, and Naz Reid finishes it. So it was great set, simple, nothing complicated about it. Well timed with the call and well executed by the players.
And you took advantage of a team that wasn't communicating defensively, didn't look to switch, tried to fight over it way too little, way too late, and that was a huge part of the ball game. Here again, as you mentioned earlier, LSU turns the ball over here and there, and State goes on a 17-0 run. I wonder what was going through Will Wade's mind then. It's like this team needs to get behind a little bit before they kick it into gear and get going again. I know that's not a formula for success, but they were able to – how many road wins in the league is that now? Five?
Yeah, 5-0 in the league, which on the road, which is phenomenal after – you know, they win their first two road games last year, and then they didn't win another one.
That was about it.
They've changed their road routine a little bit. Will Wade studied that offseason. But the biggest thing is it's a more talented group. It's a more talented group. Your experience with Tremont and Skyler in the backcourt, and that combination serves you well on the road.
What are they doing differently on the road this year, if you know?
I don't know for sure. Will Wade's been a little bit secretive about it, and understandably so, because I think they invested a lot of time and energy into that and trying to perfect that formula. I know generally speaking they're off their feet a little bit more. They're doing a little bit more mental work than they were doing last year. That they're doing more physical work. I know he likes to give the team a test on the scouting report, like literally a quiz that he quizzes them on. So you know, I think it's probably a little bit more mental, a little bit less physical, and that's probably showing up in some of these overtime games where they're still fresh at the end of the game. I think that's a big part of it.
Is that a formula for success with Reed and Waters carrying the scoring load? I'm starting to wonder a little bit about Skylar Mays. In 40 minutes, he only took six shots. He was 0-for-3 from downtown. He gives you so much on the court that besides scoring, but it seems like when he's scoring a little bit more in double digits, I think the balance is a little bit better. Do you have any concerns about that?
I don't. I think Skylar will be fine. He's in a funk right now. The only thing that I would worry about with Skyler, and Will Wade and his staff will address this, is he's so smart and he thinks the game so well. He might start overthinking it and maybe even working too hard, if that makes any sense, getting too many shots up in the gym and practice. But maybe just want to tell him to relax and sit back and not worry about it. Your shots will start falling. And I think that's just going to be the case for Skyler. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Auburn. He gets hot and hits a bunch of threes. I think he's due.
Cody Worsham, LSU Digital Media Director. Anything to read into Darius Days, only 8 minutes? It just was a bad matchup for him? Or was it the fact that Bigby Williams was playing so well?
Yeah, I think with Cavell and Naz playing so well, there weren't as many minutes to go out for Darius and Emmett. I say it all the time with these bands, it's horses for courses. There's some games where, you know, Days and Emmett will be more important, or I don't say more important, but they'll have bigger roles to play. There's some games where they'll have smaller roles to play, but that's one of the nice things about this team is these guys much as any team as I've been around, they're pretty unselfish with that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not mm-hmm. there's a lot of rooting for each other. There's a lot of cohesiveness with these guys that it's hard to develop with the team, but they seem to have a really good way about them when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, five of the players against State had 30 minutes or more. Marlon Taylor played 22, Emmett Williams 17, Darius Days 8, and that was it. Skylar Mays played the most at 40 out of the 45. So what does this tell you about this team? A hard-fought yet heartbreaking loss at home against Arkansas. I've always said you lose one at home, you got to make up for one on the road, but they've been great on the road. They fell behind, but they figured out a way. So seems like this team is maturing and growing, and they know to get the ball to Trey Waters down the stretch.
Yeah, pretty easy play. Just give it to three and let him go, and he'll make some good decisions. So, yeah, I like where they're at right now. They show that they can rebound from a loss, and that's vital. And now we'll see if they can sustain some success when it comes to Auburn on Saturday.
Yeah, 1 o'clock tip, Auburn at LSU. Bruce Pearl and company come into play. They started off on fire. They've come back down a little bit, but they've gotten some big wins of late. So that's a team that really shoots the three ball well. So LSU's perimeter defense is going to have to be really, really good. They held State to 30% shooting in the second half. 0-for-2 was State in overtime. So mission accomplished there, right?
Yeah, they did what they needed to do defensively and buckled down and got some stops. So this team is continuing to grow. They just got to put it together for 40 minutes. When they do that, you'll see them, you know, instead of some of these tight games, they'll pull away in some.
All right. Well, Cody, thank you for your time as always, man. We greatly appreciate it, and we look forward to the next Boot Up podcast and all your stuff. You can follow him at Cody Worsham, big in Twitter. Man, you're big on that stuff. How do you find the time to do that?
My wife's not happy about it. I'll just put it that way.
Okay, buddy. Valentine's Day right around the corner. Go take care of business. All right, buddy. Thank you very much. That's Cody Worsham. LSU again with the win, 90-88 in overtime. They're 18-4 overall, 8-1 in league play, just a game behind Tennessee and tied with Kentucky for second place in the SEC. Man, halfway mark of the season. Pretty darn good. And, of course, Saturday, 1 o'clock, Auburn, those other Tigers come to town for a 1 o'clock tip. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, the trade deadline has come and gone. AD still a Pel, but some new faces. We'll figure out why with Will Guillory of The Athletic next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Okay, welcome back. It's the trade deadline that has come and gone in the NBA, and the Pelicans make some moves. They just didn't make the move. Will Guillory covers the Pels for The Athletic. He is kind enough to join us now. Surprise, surprise, Will. Anthony Davis is still a Pelican. How about that?
He is. I don't think it's that big of a surprise, because I think we all kind of saw the negotiations kind of going in the wrong direction pretty much from the moment they started between the Lakers and the Pelicans. And I think from everything I've heard, I don't think there was ever a point where either side was really on the same page about, you know, what type of return the Pelicans were looking to get for a guy like Anthony Davis. And I think ultimately it's hard to say what the Pelicans should demand or what they should expect in a deal. Just until we kind of see more than one team at the negotiation table. I think I've said this before, it never really made sense to trade a guy like Anthony Davis when there's only one real team putting out, you know, legitimate offers for him. And until they can get a Boston involved, a New York Knicks involved, I don't think we should really expect them to make any serious movement towards a deal because those are the teams that are going to come with the biggest assets. So if they put their biggest assets on the table, like a Jason Tatum or a potential top three pick, then that's something the Pelicans would probably look at for Anthony Davis. But when you're looking at guys like Kyle Kuzma and Lonzo Ball, maybe not.
Ugh. Well, it had been reported that the Knicks made overtures to the Pelicans, but they turned that away. Is that simply because they didn't know where the Knicks were going to be drafting later on in June, July?
Yeah, that, and from what I heard as well, that they were willing to put Kristaps Porzingis on the table, but I think the Pelicans kind of backed away once they heard a kind of a hesitancy from the Porzingis side to make a commitment long-term in New Orleans.
Okay.
Obviously, Porzingis is going into restricted free agency this summer. He's going to have an opportunity to sign an extension. And I think he kind of made it clear that he would rather not stay in New Orleans. He would probably sign a qualifying offer, which would allow him to enter unrestricted free agency next summer, not this summer coming up, but the one after that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something, that's a risk the Pelicans probably wouldn't be willing to take if you're giving up Anthony Davis. So I think the guys that they want to bring in will be guys that are under contract, rock solid, that they can kind of build forward and not worry about, you know, having another big free agency standoff, a possible trade standoff next summer. I think that's something that they would rather avoid.
Yeah, Will Giller, The Athletic. I've got to believe that Danny Ainge picked up the phone and called either Mickey Loomis or Dell Demps or both, whatever, and said, hey, guys, look, trust me, we can make something happen. It's been well known Boston wants Anthony Davis. We'll never know if they did or not, but I've got to believe that they have communicated to one another, don't you?
Yeah, and I think, you know, we all know that Boston's kind of had eyes on Anthony Davis for a long, long time now, and they've been stacking up assets for a while, kind of preparing for this moment where they can go after AD. So I think they've made it pretty clear to the Pelicans side that they're willing to put, you know, pretty much anything on the table that the Pelicans want in order to get an Anthony Davis deal done. And I think at this point in my mind, I would still consider them the favorite to get AD, even with all of the talk out there that AD wouldn't want to re-sign in Boston and, you know, potentially Kyrie Irving may walk this summer. I think through it all, I still look at them as a team. If they are willing to put a guy like Jason Tatum on the table, I think that's the kind of piece that the Pelicans will be willing to move Anthony Davis for, just because he has that kind of superstar potential in him, and he's so young. I think ultimately we know how Danny Ainge has operated in that general manager spot with Boston. So we kind of have to see if he stands up to his work, because we've seen him in the past kind of maneuvering ways where teams are kind of looking at his moves are maybe a little shady, or maybe he didn't keep his word. So I think that's something everybody's kind of waiting for, to see if he's going to stand by what he says and really put everybody on the table except Kyrie Irving, of course, once we hit this summer.
Will Giller of The Athletic. All right, time for you to make some sense out of some nonsense as far as I'm concerned. The Pelicans roster now sits at 16 full-time players. What in the world, why the trade for Markieff Morris and a 2023 second-round pick from Washington in exchange for Wesley Johnson? Why? What does that do?
Well, I think Wesley Johnson was just a guy that was on an expired contract that the Pelicans were going to end up letting walk anyway. So if you get a second-round pick for him in exchange for Markieff Morris, who's a guy that's probably I find it hard to see him playing again this year. Maybe he will. Who knows? But he's also on an expiring deal. So basically you end up trading Wesley Johnson for a future second-round pick, and the earliest one the Wizards could offer was in 2023. So you get something for a guy that you probably were going to let walk for nothing. So I think in that way, that deal kind of makes sense. And you also get Morris's bird rights, which allows you to kind of be a favorite to re-sign him this offseason if you wanted to. But I find it hard to see that they'll do that. But if they wanted to, they would have that option as well.
Okay, so getting rid of some money, getting rid of some dead weight, and probably neither one. Johnson wasn't going to play much anymore, and I doubt if Morris ever plays for the Pelicans. We shall see. Okay, that's deal number one. Then the big deal, Nikola Mirotic gets traded to the Milwaukee Bucks for Stanley Johnson, Jason Smith, and multiple second-round picks. Tell me why and how that behooves and benefits the Pelicans.
Yeah, I mean, Mirotic, this is no secret that he's a guy that a lot of teams were going after leading up to this trade deadline. I think a lot of people saw him as a guy that could do basically what he did for the Pelicans last year, come in with a team that has playoff aspirations, get some big shots and big games. That guy has a ton of experience. He's been around. He can fit in basically any kind of system. He's unselfish. So I think that's the type of guy you would want to add to any playoff team. And I think ultimately what the Pelicans had to realize is that even though there were a lot of teams lining up, there weren't really any lining up to offer a first-round pick. And I think that's something that they kind of put out there that they wanted for Nico, was to say, hey, we really would like to keep Nico, but if we're going to get rid of him, it's a first-round pick that we're looking for. And I think once they realized they couldn't get that, I think a deal where you get a young prospect like Stanley Johnson and multiple second-round picks, four, I believe the number is that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's a big return for a guy that's probably going to walk this summer anyway. And he's getting close to 30, so I don't think that's a guy the Pelicans really viewed as a part of their future. So I think getting a bunch of picks in where you have some flexibility to make some moves down the line or maybe add some second-round picks, I think that's something the Pelicans were looking for, and I think it's a pretty decent return for a guy that you probably were going to let walk for nothing right. Anyway.
Got a lot of second-round picks, not many first-round picks, but that's, I'm sure, what they're trying to get with the Anthony Davis situation. Do you believe the Pels tried to shop Julius Randle around?
From my understanding is that there were some talks. They were trying to gauge what kind of interest he had out there and how many teams were willing to give up, you know, valuable assets for Julius. But I think ultimately the Pelicans, they really like Julius. And I think they see him as a guy that they could potentially add as far as maybe give him a new contract this summer, a guy that they can maybe add into their kind of the building blocks for this team going forward. And I think on the other side, Julius, he's really enjoyed his time with the Pelicans. I think pretty much immediately after he signed his deal with New Orleans, he kind of made it clear that this is a place that he wants to stay. He feels like he can build a future with New Orleans. So I think there's mutual interest on both sides to kind of keep Julius around and sign him to a new deal this summer. But a big part of that is just what type of number he's going to be asking for, how many other suitors he's going to have. But I think, in my estimation, I think the Pelicans would like to keep him around, and I think Julius would probably like to stay as well.
What's Drew Holiday thinking these days, you think?
I think he's got to be one of the most interesting characters in all of this, for sure, just because he's a guy that's, you know, getting close to 30, obviously playing the best basketball of his career right now. But I think a lot of guys in his situation will be looking to find the first exit out of here, but I think Drew's just a really different kind of guy, and I think he really he's built a foundation here with his family, with this organization. I think it wasn't a surprise to see him sign that 5-year deal with his team for those same reasons, and I think ultimately I see him being a guy that they would want to keep, and I can tell you that there were some talks about what other teams would want to trade for Drew Holiday. And it was pretty much made clear that the Pelicans weren't interested in moving him. I think that's a guy that they would love to keep. He's still got a few more years left on his deal, so it's not like there's any pressure on the team to kind of move him before it's too late. And I think not only his talent, but I think Drew, the guy, the character, the leader, the kind of a stand-up guy that everybody can look to as an example, I think that's something they want in that locker room for this post-Anthony Davis era. And I think if you're going to build a team, you would want a team full of guys like Drew Holiday.
Yeah,
and
I
think that's something that the Pelicans want to, and that's one of the main reasons they want to keep him around, is if they're going to start this thing over, they want to start putting the pieces in place where they can build a foundation that they can believe in, and they want to have guys, not only good basketball players, but good people they can build this franchise around. And I think Drew Holiday exemplifies that in a lot of different ways.
The word was out that Anthony Davis wasn't going to play prior to the trade deadline. He was able to go. He's been cleared to play, he says. He was held out against Indiana, held out against Chicago. The trade deadline has come and gone. I still don't understand the logic about playing him. What happens with ownership, management, coaches? How do they handle Anthony Davis from here on out? Because you've got a fan base to think about, you've got your team to think about, you've got your trade aspect to think about. There's a lot to think about. What do they do with Anthony Davis?
Absolutely. I think from here for the next few days, I think there's definitely going to be some serious conversations had between the organization and Anthony Davis's representation, Rich Paul, about how they're going to move forward. I can tell you that from Anthony's side, he wants to play. He wants to get out there. He feels like he's healthy again. He's been wanting to play these past few games. So I think He's ready to get back out there, and I think he's just the kind of a guy that just wants to go compete. He wants to get on the floor, and as crazy as it sounds, he wants to play with his teammates again. He likes those guys, and I think he's been able to kind of separate the business from everything else, unlike a lot of fans and media watching this.
Yeah.
And I think in his mind, it wouldn't be that big a deal to go out and play with those guys just because he likes them and he wants to play basketball, and this is his job, and he's healthy, so that's what he wants to do now. He doesn't want to just sit around and do nothing for the next 4 or 5 months, which is understandable. But I think from the Pelicans' perspective, I think if I'm Dell Demps, I don't think there's any way I put Anthony Davis back on the court and put him in any risk of getting an injury where it affects his trade value going forward. That guy is too valuable. They're going to get too much for him this offseason to take any kind of risk as far as him getting an injury that could maybe force him to have some type of surgery or maybe have people look at him in a different light. I mean, he's already got a pile of injuries, you know, to the sky from the time he's been here, and I think that's the last thing they would want to see is him sustain an injury where it kind of kills their leverage and they go into the summer not knowing what they can get for AD. So I think the best move for everybody involved was just to have AD sit out. But I can tell you from AD side, they're going to put up a fight, and it's going to be interesting to see what type of middle ground they can find.
I'm with you. Will Giller of The Athletic. Do you believe if they could have done it over again, do you think that Rich Paul, Anthony Davis would have rather kept this quiet and work behind the scenes or let it be known? If they could have a do-over, what do you think?
I think the way it played out, I don't think there's any doubt that they would rather keep this quiet. I mean, you know, I think in their mind, playing it this way, they thought it would kind of pressure New Orleans into making the Lakers move. I think best case scenario for those guys would be that AD would be a Laker right now, and they would be making a playoff push in L.A. And I think that's something that his side, they thought it would be a legit possibility if they brought this public, and they kind of put the Pelicans in a position where, you know, it'll be tough to kind of move forward with AD, but I think the Pelicans have done a pretty decent job of kind of handling this situation, making it clear how much they value AD and not allowing themselves to get pushed around just because of the media leaks or so many different people saying this or that, or AD kind of saying, I don't want to go here, I'd rather go there. And they've kind of stood firm through all of this, and you got to give them credit for that. But ultimately, I think we need to hold off on any praise we give to this team until we see what type of deal they actually make.
No doubt.
Because you gotta make the right move if you're going to rebuild this franchise, and you have to use a piece like AD to really replenish the players on the roster, the draft picks, all of that. And if they don't do that, then I think this time with the LA Lakers is going to look really bad. But right now, I think it's the right move for them. Waiting to see what Boston and the Knicks will be able to offer.
I'm with you. I don't think L.A. had any deal they could put on the table that the Pelicans were going to take. I don't think they had anything of value for him. I'm just curious as to who's going to be making the decision for the Pelicans. Is it the current regime, or is it going to be a brand new group?
Yeah, that's a really big question right now, and I think it's pretty interesting to see that obviously the Gail Benson and Mickey Loomis put Dell Demps in charge to kind of make the decisions up to the trade deadline. He was able to make the Wesley Johnson trade and then the Nikola Mirotic trade at this point. So Dell is still operating in there, and I guess we have to see whether he'll still be around this summer. Yeah. But I still kind of lean towards that maybe there'll be some changes, but maybe not the big changes that we expect. But I think ultimately, even though the Pelicans are looking pretty good right now, I think the fact that they're even in this position in the first place kind of tells you that there has to be some type of change just to kind of put a new face on this entire franchise and kind of figure out what they're going to be moving forward.
Well, nobody in their right mind thought anything was of significance was going to happen. It didn't. Now the summertime will come, and then it's going to really get busy. Just when you thought you could go on vacation, Will Guillory, The Athletic.
Man, it's 24/7, 365 in the NBA, man. It never stops.
Never stops. You're the best, man. Thanks so much for your time on a busy day. Thank you.
Hey, I appreciate you for having me on.
All right, buddy. You take care. Will Guillory of The Athletic. So Nico Mirotic, here today, gone tomorrow, going to Milwaukee. Good for him. He's going to one of the best teams in the East, a team with a legit shot to get to the NBA Finals. Good for him. Thank you, Nico, for your contributions to the Pelicans. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. We've talked a lot of hoops today. We're going to talk a lot of football in hour number two. Newest member of the NFL Hall of Fame, Kevin Mawai, will join us. As will the Schwab, Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. Ed Orgeron, fifth-ranked recruiting class in the country. Everybody thinks of the last impression with Ismail Sopcich donning the Alabama visor. They did get Devontae Lee. Coach O addressed the question, does LSU have a problem in the city of Ameet? Listen to what he said.
You know, I'll say this. We went into that area and haven't had a lot of success there. And I'm happy that we got Devontae. And it was a 2-year recruiting battle to get him here. A lot of schools wanted to get him there. Obviously, there's some players at other schools that help recruit these guys, and whatever makes them go over there, I don't want to discuss that. I just know this: we did the recruiting the right way, as well as we can do it, and we feel good that we got Devontae.
Is that kind of similar to, like, Les Monroe for a little period of time was kind of hard to get some guys? Is that kind
you can put that. You know, but again, we have somebody. We have Devontae. I want to get all the players in the state of Louisiana every year. And, you know, sometimes you will, sometimes you won't. I'm glad we got the guys we want. They want to be here.
We did it the right way. I don't know what makes them go there. The right way. Read between the tea leaves on that one. Anytime you have a changeover, some players leave, some newcomers come in. Coach O identified who are going to be his leaders. Spring practice right around the corner.
You know, obviously you got to look at Joe and look at Caleban Chasson coming back. Michael Divinity is off the charts right now, doing a great job. Rashard Lawrence, Braden Fajoko, Lloyd Cushenberry, Damian Lewis, those guys have done a great job for us.
They got some leaders, no question. On the Raging Cajun side of things, great recruiting class for Billy Napier. Jabbar Jaluk talked about this year's recruiting class for the Raging Cajuns.
We're very excited about this class. Young men are bringing to the table character, academic, work ethics, all the things that we're looking for to make sure that we have quality young men. That's going to be a part of our program. They're family-oriented. They have good family support. And that's going to build our program to where we want to be at in the near future.
Jabbar talked about it takes a village to recruit a kid, and depth was a big focus of their recruiting aspect. And he talked about the Cajuns' recruiting process.
This opportunity that we had this year to have more time really gave us an opportunity to dig into who we were recruiting and get to know the young men on a personal level with their families and everything. So that was very important for us. And our program and our system of evaluating is very thorough, and we have an opportunity to know who we're getting athletically, academically, socially, and see how that those young men can really help our program. And I think our class that we have right now that we assemble is going to be very dynamic in that aspect of it, and we're looking forward to what these young men are going to be able to develop into.
We will see. Give these kids time to develop and grow, and let's see what happens 2 years down the road. Some of them will step in and be immediate contributors. That's how it works. Some will take some time to process and to learn to the adjustment from the high school level to the collegiate level, because they're going up against full-grown men now, and that's a difficult task, to say the very, very least. The NBA All-Star Draft will be tonight. We'll see who Giannis and LeBron pick for their All-Star team. We're going to take a timeout here. 1 hour's down, 1 hour to go. A very big second hour coming your way. Cannot wait to talk with Kevin Mawai, the newest member, one of the newest members of the NFL Hall of Fame, right here from Leesville to LSU to the NFL, one of the good guys. Stick around. Hour number two, right around the corner on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Our number two of two, and away we go on this Thursday, February 7th. What's going on outside? 77 degrees in Acadiana? Are you kidding me? Holy schmoly. The trade deadline has come and gone. Anthony Davis, still a Pelican. Tigers win a big one on the road. Cajuns lose a tough one at home. And we got an NFL Hall of Famer coming up in just a minute. But without further ado, as we do each and every day at this time of day, let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, Mr. Domain, without further ado, fire away at will and good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jordy. My goodness, I think we got to start things all talking about last night, especially with the LSU Tigers. Just phenomenal stuff, especially that Naz Reid shot almost at the buzzer. That was one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen. Like it bounced just as like the shot clock expired, so the shot was able to go down. It was just, I have never seen something like that. Like this team, I know Tigers are related to the Cats, but man, this team's got nine lives.
It's hard to believe a ball that you shoot has backspin, hits the front of the rim, and goes forward and in. He swears that Wade Sims was looking down from heaven and had some divine intervention. So
yeah,
that's wonderful. A big, big win for LSU. And Naz Reid certainly put on a show with 29 points.
Oh, he had probably his big breakout moment a lot of Tiger fans have been wanting for some time, Jordy. But now we move over to something a little less than ideal stuff to talk about, and that's the big hurt, Jordy. Frank Thomas passed away a couple hours ago. The news came out. What's your favorite memory of the big hurt, Jordy?
Just hitting long bombs. Playing at Auburn, was a great athlete there, and he shares this sad moment with the Hall of Famer, Frank Robinson, who's passed away today at the age of 83. But could you imagine being at Auburn with Charles Barkley, Bo Jackson, and Frank Thomas all together at the same time? What a triumvirate of greatness on the field of athletics.
Exactly, Jordy. Dude is just an absolute monster. We could talk about it for days to come. The guy just was phenomenal in his MLB career. I mean, we could talk about back in the World Series Game 5. I think that's the moment a lot of people are going to talk about, when he hit that two-run bomb to help get the Orioles on the board early on in that ballgame.
He could hit it. When he hit it right, it was gone a long, long ways. Yes.
Exactly. What a big thing for it was just a moment in time. And then we've got to talk about Kyler Murray. He officially declared for the NFL Combine earlier today. Is it still strange to think he's still committed to playing the NFL?
No, I think he really loves it. I think he can get more money more quickly. I think he doesn't want to, he'll be a first-round pick. He doesn't want to go to baseball and have to languish in the minor leagues. There's no telling how long it's going to take him to get up to the big leagues in baseball. There are no guarantees there. But as a first-round pick, he's guaranteed to be a quarterback and starting quarterback for some franchise that drafts him. So I don't fault him at all on that one, at all.
You really can't fault him, but it just seems weird. The guy could probably wind up having a longer career in the major leagues, but, you know, he's going to wind up making a good bit of money either way.
The rules in football now, they protect those quarterbacks so much. I mean, you sneeze on them, there's a penalty. So, I mean, those days are far and few between now. So, got to go with where your heart is. And if he loves football that much, go play. You'll be okay. You'll be okay.
Yeah. Like I said, also, we got him. Let me look this up. The trade between the Pels and the Bucks and the Pistons in exchange for Nikola Mirotic. You a fan of the trade?
No. I mean, you know, what are they doing? What is the goal? They get 4 second-round picks. How many second-round picks actually make it in the NBA and make an impact. Yeah, that's how you fill your 11th, 12th, 13th roster spot with second round picks. No, I mean, you know, I think they did Nico a favor. Jason Smith, he'll be gone. I just want to know what the big picture plan is. That's the key. You got to get first round picks. You got to make a splash with this Anthony Davis thing. So the jury's still out.
Exactly, Jordy. Moving up. Let me kind of correct here. I want to just correct this real quick and apologize. When I talked about Frank Thomas, obviously I meant Frank Robinson passed away today. So let me kind of
Frank Robinson. Ooh,
yeah.
Thank you.
So I kind of slipped up there, Jordy. My bad.
Okay. You know, that's all right. Yeah. All you Frank Thomas fans, he's still around. He's still good. Frank Robinson, who was an MVP in the National League, an MVP with the Reds, an MVP with the Orioles, just a Hall of Fame, great, great player. Frank Robinson passes away at the age of 83.
Yeah. So let me kind of apologize there. Turnover on my part, Jordy. That being said, though, sticking with baseball.
You'd be in big trouble if this show was in Alabama. I'm
telling you
right
now. Oh, trust me. We would get get
the. We don't need phone calls that badly. We just don't.
No, we don't. But sticking with baseball, Jordy, the Philadelphia Phillies, they got one of the best catchers in the league, JT Realmuto from the Marlins. It's a huge pickup for the Phillies. Am I wrong here?
No, that's a great pickup. And again, what are they doing in Florida? Do they care about baseball? I don't think they do. But no, it's a great pickup. You got to have that battery, mate. You got to have that stop that can control pitchers, control your infield. I think that's a great pickup.
It could be a big pickup for a team that's wanting to make a run in the playoffs this year, especially with a lot of the young talent they have. Aaron Nola, your boy.
Aaron Nola, yes.
This guy can wind up having a solid run,
yes.
And this catcher could be a big part of that, Jordy. And last one here, I just saw this a little bit earlier today. Todd McShay just dropped his mock draft 2.0, and Greedy Williams, he's projected to go to the Detroit Lions with the 8th pick, and Devin White, he got dropped down a little bit. I mentioned a while back he was heading to the Detroit Lions, but this one, he's going at the number 12 spot. Sounds about right, Jordy?
Time will tell. Look, 6 former LSU players are heading to the NFL Combine, and that's safety John Battle, running back Nick Brossette, tight end Foster Moreau, place kicker Cole Tracy, and then you've got Devin White and Greedy Williams. Let's see. The film doesn't lie. Let's see how he does in the combine. Let's see how they do at their pro day. Put it all in the tumbler. They'll come out with numbers, and then we'll see. Look, he's going to be a first-round pick. He's going to make a lot of money. Smart move on his part. He did not need to come back to LSU and risk injury. Get it while you can and move on. And there you have it. There's our Hot Topics for the day, brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet, right there in St. Martinville, the Biard family. Not a bigger sports fan in the world than the Biard family. And look, they have grown as a company. They have expanded as a company. They have updated things as a company. Look, we've been doing it for nearly 90 years. Things are going to get bigger and better. But they've kept their core values in check, and that is never use anything but the finest product, the finest spices, and the finest peppers. Cajun Chef. Bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go. Everything tastes better with Cajun Chef hot sauce on it. Kevin Mawai, going to be inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame soon. He joins us next.
Topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
And it's great to have you back. Welcome aboard again. And what a great, great day it is. For us, we get to talk to one of the good guys who, through hard work, perseverance, has gotten the absolute ultimate honor, and that is now going to be inducted into the National Football League's Hall of Fame. Not bad for a kid from Leesville High, the Wampus Cat, now to the NFL, and now to the Hall of Fame, and that is Kevin Mawai. Kind enough to join us. I know you've been inundated, but from all of us LSU Tiger alumni fans, congratulations, buddy. Well deserved. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jordy. Thanks for having me. Thanks for the congrats. Man, I am floating. I'm 5'9". My feet have not touched the floor since Saturday night. And it's just been a whirlwind, man. It's been so crazy and hurt from so many people and, you know, trying to navigate all the media that's wanting to spend time with me. And, sure. And I'm so appreciative of it. But, man, it's good to be with you.
Third time's a charm, man. So, again, tell me how this all unfolds. So everyone who's nominated meets, stays in a hotel. Take me through the process.
Yeah, so once you make the finalist list, the 15 finalists, you go to the Super Bowl city, you're in a hotel room, everybody's in the same hotel, and you have events to go do. On Thursday night, you have a gold jacket reception where you meet other Hall of Famers and sponsors of the Hall of Fame. And on Friday, you go to the Merlin Olsen Luncheon. Okay. Where every gold jacket member that is in town and alive is at that luncheon. And
awesome. You know,
you just get to see everybody. They present you there as a finalist. And then Saturday, they request that you be in a room at a given time. Okay. The vote starts, you know, they start the process at 7 in the morning, and they go until the vote's done. And so the goal is to be done by 3 o'clock. So they ask you to be in your room by 2. And from 2 o'clock until you find out one way or another, you just sit and wait. And whoever's in your room, it could be family, whatever. For me, it was just my wife, Tracy, and I, and that was it. And you wait for
the knock on the door.
Yeah, if you get a phone call of somebody letting you know that, hey, this is the vote was on, you didn't make it next year, they give you the statistics of how, you know. But if you get the knock, that's what you want. And I got the knock this year, and it was like a 2.5 hour wait. I found out about 4:20. It was crazy. I just, you know, there's a moment of peace in our room where neither one of us were on the phone. We just kind of sat down, took a deep breath, and got quiet in our room for a moment. And then I got the loud boom and knock on the door. Jumped out of my chair, threw my phone across the room, and it was just crazy. I looked at Tracy, and we both just started crying. And she's like, you got to go open the door.
Yeah, and look, that's the guy. David Baker is the guy. So you open the door, and can you kind of remember what he said to you?
No, I just think he opened the door, Kevin, congratulations. You are now a Hall of Famer. So I don't even remember. I was crying so much. And everybody knows when you get the knock what it's about. So you know you made it, but it's just the emotion is so strong, especially for guys that had to wait. I waited. This is my third time around.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, it's like because you don't know. You don't know if you're going to get in. And the waiting for 3 hours is the worst three-hour wait of anybody's lifetime. But to open that door is the greatest moment of my sports career in my entire life. And I'll never forget it. He's so big. I mean, I opened the door. I shook his hand, started crying, and I just hugged him. And so he's so big, I look like a small guy next to him. And I just cried. I cried. And then the woman, there's a staff member from the Pro Football Hall of Fame for the last 2 years. She was the one who came up to gather me to go to the loop, you know, to those that didn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the honor show, and she's like, I've been with you for the last 2 years. I wanted to be one of the first ones up here to say congratulations.
That's awesome.
So I hugged her, and then I turned around, went back in my room, and Tracy and I had a moment. We both kind of cried a little bit together, loved on each other. And then within 20 minutes of all that happening, you whisked away out of your room, downstairs, into a holding room. And that's where you find out who the other inductees are going to be. And I went down there, and the Bolin family was there, and Johnny Robinson was there and his family.
Awesome.
And then I went in, and then, you know, Ty Law came behind me, and then, you know, Tony and Ed Reed, right? And so that was our class. That was our class. And we're all sitting there hugging on each other, congratulating each other. And And then literally you're on a bus headed to the honor show when I present you to the nation at the NFL honor show.
So you're in the hotel room. Mr. Baker leaves. You hug your wife. Did you make one quick phone call to anyone?
Well, my kids couldn't be there. Abigail, you know, she's my 19-year-old daughter, and Kirkland, my 20-year-old son, and he's in school in Florida, and, you know, and my daughter's in school here at ASU. Well, she couldn't be there because she's training. They have a swim meet coming up, and she couldn't leave because of training. And my son had just gotten back from a research trip, and school semester had just started earlier in the week, and he couldn't make the turnaround that quick. And so, you know, the first person we called was my kids. We FaceTimed my daughter, and she was crying on the phone. And she, I knew I should have came. I told you to get in. You know, so I'm sorry. We're FaceTiming. We're both crying. And then I was FaceTiming my son, and he's excited. Hey, I'm so happy. You know, I knew you were going to get in this year. He's all cool about it. But and that was it. That was the first two people we called. And then they ask you not to let anybody know until the nation knows. But by the time you leave the hotel room and get down to the bus, I'm getting blown up. My, you know, text messages, people calling. The crazy thing is there's people wanting to know that would never be in my top 25 wanting to know if I got in. Like, you're going to find out, but you're not one of the people that I'm going to be the first ones to contact, you know. But, you know, the thing is everybody that knows you or that played with you or, you know, as a part of your journey, they feel invested in it, and so that it was wonderful. I mean, but it was a whirlwind, and this has been nonstop. It really has been nonstop.
Kevin Mawai going into the class of the 2019 NFL Hall of Fame, one of the greatest honors he could get. Baseball, they get to wear a cap to symbolize who they really want to go into the Hall of Fame as. The NFL doesn't do that. You get a gold jacket. But if you had to wear a jersey, what would you wear?
It would be a Jets jersey. I played there for 8 years. I had Pro Bowls there. I made a name for myself at New York. And fortunately for us, we don't have to go in with a helmet on. They go in with your face. And the Pro Football Hall of Fame recognizes the teams that you played for. And the teams recognize you. And, you know, I was drafted by Seattle, had three mediocre years there, both as a team, and I was grown as a player. But went to New York as a highly sought-after free agent, and I made a name for myself in 8 years I was there. But
yes, you did.
Then fast forward to the Tennessee Titans, I had 4 great years in Tennessee, and 2 Pro Bowls and 2, you know, all-pro years there. And I recognize myself with those too. I talked to the ownership at Tennessee Titans to thank them, and Amy Strong thanked me for what I did to represent the Titans. And I told them, I played for New York, and that's, you know, the stuff's going to be in green and white because that's who I really am. But it would be remiss if I didn't recognize the two other teams that brought me into the league and took me out. And they deserve it. I was a part of the organization, maybe not for 8 years, but I represented both of those teams in the best way I possibly could.
Kevin, when did you fall in love with the game of football? And I don't think anybody sets out initially and wants to be on the offensive line. When did you everybody wants to be a running back or a quarterback, but you know, when did you fall in love with the game, and when did the offensive line and the center position in particular come into play?
Yeah, nobody ever says, "Ooh, I can't wait to be an offensive lineman in Pop Warner football." But you know, I didn't. You know, I lived in Germany. My dad was in the Army, and we lived in Germany. And when I was in eighth grade, I played flag football for the Hanau Panthers, and for my coach, whose the name is Fred Moses. And I went to practice that day, and I fell in love with it. Day one, I was 8 years old. I fell in love with football the first day I went out there, and I remember the moment, and I remember that afternoon I came back from practice, I told my mom, I'm going to play in the NFL. And, you know, that was 40 years ago. And if I remember it like it was yesterday, and at the time I played tight end, I played running back, I was a skill guy, and I played quarterback for those 2 years for that team. And then went
go
on,
ahead, big
played
guy.
2 years
go
to
ahead.
Tackle. And was quarterback and, you know, tight end. And then when I got to Leesville, from Germany, we moved to Leesville. It was at the junior high, and that's where I moved to linebacker. I started growing and moved to linebacker and then played guard at junior high. And then when I got to be a freshman at Leesville High School is when I made the move to center, and I've been there ever since. And, you just kind of grow into the position. But me having played those other positions younger growing up, it just added to my ability and my skill set that made me the center that I was, you know, as I got older. And, nobody ever sets out to say, ooh, I'm going to be an offensive tackle. But, you know, it's pretty neat because Bruce Matthews played 19 years in NFL. He's a Hall of Famer, but he played quarterback way back. And a lot of things. Villanueva, who's an offensive tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers now, he was a wide receiver in college. And what happened, you just kind of grow into the position, and that's what happened to me. And I fell in love with it because, as a center, I had the ball in my hand every play.
Yeah, that's right.
And I got to hit every play, and that's what I enjoyed about the game.
Kevin Mawai, we'll let you go on this one. What I read that I thought was really, really neat, you have a chance to have anyone in the world present you into the Hall of Fame. You chose your wife. Why?
Because she's been with me since day one. We started dating my freshman year in college, and we dated through college. We were married my senior year in college, and we've been married 26 years. We've been together for 29 years, and she knows everything about me. She knows more about me than any coach ever can and ever will. She's my best friend. She's a Hall of Fame mom. She's a Hall of Fame wife. She's a Hall of Fame friend. And I tell you, she's the example of a Proverbs 31 woman, and God gave her to me. And sometimes I question why me, because she's so good, and I love her. She knows everything, every bump, bruise, ankle twist, broken bone, surgery, everything there is to know about me on and off the field. There's nobody else that could do a better job, and she deserves this. Yeah, I could not have done this without my wife, and she's a Hall of Fame wife, and she'll be a part of it.
A Hall of Fame wife introducing a Hall of Fame man. Hey, congratulations, buddy. We're so proud of you. We're so happy for you. You deserve all the credit for all your hard work and your accomplishments. Congratulations, and thank you. Thank you for your time. We greatly appreciate
it. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it, Jordy. You take care. And to all the people out of Louisiana and LSU fans, thank you guys so much. You're such a great big part of this, and I'm so happy and proud to represent LSU, the state of Louisiana, and the Louisville Wampanoags. So thank you, guys.
God bless you, buddy. Thank you. Kevin Mawai, Hall of Famer in the NFL. We'll be back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Well, another NFL season has come and gone, but now the silly season begins, and now it's getting ready for the combines, the NFL draft, free agency, franchise tags, and all that. In other words, it never ends. It never ends. So that's great for our good friend, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports, Mr. Frank Schwab, who joins us yet again. We're so thankful for him. Frank, how are you?
Hey, what's going on?
They did it again, didn't they? That coach, that Belichick dude, he's something special, man. Not many teams will change their approach like he did, from going from man to man like they did all year long defensively to playing zone. He just gets it somehow, some way. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's got to be an organizational thing. You got to sign the right players and draft the right players who can do that, who can change on the fly like that, who can come in on a Wednesday when the game plan starts to come together and play a completely different defense than you played the week before. It takes a special kind of player, and it takes a coach that is not necessarily, you know, I hate this term because it's so dumb, but teams talk about, we have an identity. We want to find an identity. Well, there's no such thing. The Patriots' identity is, we're going to do whatever it takes to beat you. Other teams, I think, and coaches, their ego gets involved, I think. They get stuck on, my scheme is going to work. It is going to beat these guys. Whereas Bill Belichick just says, all right, I've seen what you do well. I've seen what you don't do well. I'm going to take away what you do well. I'm going to force you into trying to do some things you don't do well. And if we have to completely change our scheme to do it, so be it. They've done a masterful job at that. He's the greatest coach ever. I mean, I don't think we can even argue that at this point. And this was one of his masterpieces.
It really, truly, I marvel at him. He is something else. I can't believe I'm asking this question, but people are asking me, and it's come up nationally. He's the MVP of the game, but is Julian Edelman a Hall of Famer?
I don't think so. I guess at least at some point I understand why the conversation is happening. He has been a fantastic postseason player, and that should matter. Edelman's going to make the Hall of Fame because he's a great postseason player, right? Let's be honest. He's not a Hall of Fame player just for the regular season, so there's something to be said for that. But when you look at his total body of work, I just don't think he is. I mean, maybe he has a few extra, three more great years in him, and that pushes him over the finish line. I could see it at least. But I just think he's one of those guys who you've had a great postseason career, you won a lot of rings, but I'm not putting you in the Hall of Fame over Isaac Bruce, let's say, who's not in right now, who can't get in. It's just, he's a very, very good player. He's a clutch player. He's had some unbelievable moments in the playoffs. But to me, no, he's not a Hall of Famer. But at least, I can at least, all right, I get it. I get why people are having a conversation.
One person that is going into the Hall of Fame, played at LSU. Yeah. I wanted your thoughts on Kevin Mawai, drafted by the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Had his most tenured stay with the Jets and then finished his career with the Titans, the NFL Players Association leader. Your thoughts on Kevin Mawai?
I mean, I think the most impressive thing about Kevin Mawai is his second to last season, when I believe he was 36 years old, he was named All-Pro. To be a center in what, 15, well, he played 16 years, so that must have been his 15th or 13th out of 14th. Yeah, 16. Yeah. So his 15th season in the NFL, playing just about every game. He was an Iron Man. He was very durable. Playing just about every game in the middle of the trenches of the NFL, he had enough left in the tank in his 15th season to be the best center in football. I mean, that to me is remarkable. He really was just an amazing player for so long. And that center position, we get bogged down a lot talking about left tackles, and I get it. It's a position that's kind of out on that island, and we notice it a lot, and we talk about its importance. But man, when it's always one of those things when a team loses its center, especially if it's a good center, in the middle of a season, watch that team struggle, because the center has, the center, really is the quarterback of the line almost. He usually calls out protections, and he's the anchor there, a hugely important position. And I'm glad to see him get his due. He really was a fantastic player, and I thought that was a rightful spot in the Hall of Fame for Kevin Mawai.
Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. Are we about to find out what the Pittsburgh Steelers are all about? Because they've got this fight with Le'Veon Bell. Antonio Brown is now in the news for all the wrong reasons. Things seem to be spiraling in the wrong direction for what has normally been one of the, one of the statues of the NFL.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's, Hines Ward talked to, our Charles Robinson, Therese Taylor over at Yahoo Sports, our podcast. And Hines Ward just lit into the Steelers organization. I thought he brought up a lot of good points, basically saying, it never used to be this way with Steelers. Now we're talking more about them off the field than we ever do on the field. It's just the culture there has kind of spiraled out of control. And Mike Tomlin does deserve a lot of blame for that. And, maybe the players just tuned him out after all these years. I don't know. But, the Steelers wanting to go down this road of transition tagging Le'Veon Bell, maybe to trade him. It sounds like they want to trade him. Why? Well, just get a clean break. Don't drag this on any longer than it has to be. And it's a needless gamble. I don't think they're going to do it, to be honest. I mean, that's been in the news today that they're considering it. But I think, it's just like Kirk Cousins last year, and we heard rumors that the Redskins might tag him again and then trade him. It's just so, it's so risky. They need Bell's cooperation for this. I mean, you can't basically sign and trade a guy unless the player agrees to it. And why would Le'Veon Bell agree to work alongside the Steelers at this point? He'll just go out on his own in free agency, and hey, if the Steelers want to match some huge deal he gets from the Jets or the Colts, well, fine. Then he got the money he wanted in the end after all. So I just think this is a weird story. I don't know why it's out there. I don't know why the Steelers are even considering this. The upside of it, they're not getting like multiple first-round picks for Le'Veon Bell. That's just not going to happen.
Right.
Like, they're going to get a third-round pick for compensation when he leaves as a free agent. I don't think they're going to get a ton more than that. And again, it's just this drama again. Just let it go. Wow. Get out of the news for a little bit. And the Antonio Brown thing, I don't even know what to make of this latest accusation. Look, he wasn't arrested. He wasn't charged or anything like that. So I don't want to jump off the deep end with that. But you're right. He's back in the headlines. Le'Veon Bell's back in the headlines. When is this going to end and the Pittsburgh Steelers kind of just get back to football?
Yeah, a friend of mine says if you're in the headlines when it's not the season, 9 times out of 10 it's for bad news, and you don't want to be in the news at this time of the year. You're right. Frank Schwab, Shutdown Corner, kind enough to join us. I wonder, why is Bob Stoops returning to coaching with Dallas in the XFL? Can I read between the tea leaves? Maybe he gets a little pro experience, and then he moves over from the XFL of the sidelines in Jerry's world? I mean, Jerry had some success with a former Oklahoma coach, didn't he? And Barry Switzer? I'm just saying.
Sure did. I mean, you talk about out of left field. I thought Bob Stoops was just done, and that's fine. I mean, if he was, leaves a great job at Oklahoma where he's making a ton of money to go and coach in the XFL, the minor league. I just don't know what's even going on here. And I guess, maybe you could be right. And he just feels like, I got to get some way back into the NFL. I need some pro experience. This is it. I don't know necessarily that the NFL is going to be more impressive Bob Stoops if he coaches in the XFL. I mean, I think it's one of those deals where Bob Stoops is a great coach. And if it's not happening, it's just not happening at this point. But I don't know. Maybe he stepped away and just got bored and I don't even know.
Yeah.
Like, he could have any college job he wants. Like, if Bob Stoops, were to say, hey, guys, I'm here. I'm ready to get hired. USC would fire their guy immediately and hire Bob Stoops.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
So why kind of, pound around in the Bush leagues, I guess. I just don't know. I don't know what they offered him, what they sold him on. This is just one of those really, really strange deals that I can't wrap my head around.
I'm with you. Football, the NFL has gone away. Are you going to be watching football this weekend? Ebersol, Bill Polian, you got coaches that we're familiar with, some other players that have had a little snack in the NFL. Are you interested in the Alliance of Football League, whatever they call it?
I'm interested in the league as a whole. I don't know that necessarily this weekend I'm going to be watching much. I'm going to be hanging out with my family. I haven't seen in a while, but it's
there. You go.
I've said because as somebody who loved the USFL, I mean, it was down there, the Breakers, right? Like
it was a fun
league. It was a cool league. It was something when I was a kid. I loved Doug Flutie and Herschel Walker and all those guys.
Right.
And I've always said since then, there's room for a minor league. There's room for a second. It's not going to compete with the NFL. If you think you're going to beat the NFL, you're just dumb. Like, that's
no,
a bad business model.
No.
But if you think you can be a second football league running basically during your off season, if you get even 1/10 of the NFL's audience, you're a really good league. You're a really, really strong business at that point. I think there's room for that. I'm interested to see if either of these leagues can do it. I think it was, not that you could kind of collude together, but it was almost seemed like, okay, this was a great idea. Why are two leagues doing this? Can both of these leagues really survive? Like, why
don't
they kind of cannibalize each other, right? So, in general, I'm interested. I'm interested to see if it survives. I'm interested to see if they can bring some new ideas that the NFL is going to steal, basically make our product better, like they did with the original XFL and a lot of the production things they did. But the football itself, I can't say I'm like jumping up and down to watch it. I think we'll see. We'll see a few guys revive their careers and get a shot in the NFL, and we'll see some good stories out of the Alliance of American Football. But I'm interested. I'm just just interested to see the train wreck. But it's past its time where we got a real second football league, because there's definitely room for it in America.
Maybe these NFL teams allow their, quote, practice squad members to go play, get some experience. I don't know.
Yeah, you'd think. I mean, one of the great, kind of developmental grounds was NFL Europe for a long time. World League, they used to call it.
Yeah.
And, you saw guys like Delhomme and Kurt Warner come out of there. It's especially for quarterbacks. There's nothing like playing. You can't replicate that in practice. So, For a guy who you really like, who's down on your depth chart and maybe on your practice squad, like you said, maybe he's a young quarterback. It's just, let's let this kid get reps and see if he can get better, and maybe he becomes Jake Delhomme. I think that it's going to be interesting to see how this evolves. If it evolves as one of these leagues survives, I don't think both can, one of these leagues survives and then basically decides, we're not going to try to take a bite out of the NFL's apple. We're going to work with the NFL. We're going to say, give us a few guys. If you got a quarterback you want to develop, let's get a two-way contract going, and we'll work on that. I think it can work that way. I really think it can work that way, and I think because of just this appetite for football, that it could have an appeal, not to the 120 million people who watch the Super Bowl or whatever, but could you get a couple million on a Sunday in February when nothing else is going on? Why not?
Yeah. Why not? He is Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. We'll let you get out on this one. Some people loved the Super Bowl. Some people hated the Super Bowl. What did you think of that 13-3 game?
I was kind of in between. It wasn't the worst game I've ever seen. Like, I'd take that over 55-10, or the Buccaneers just destroying the Raiders. Those are bad games. Those are games that I wasn't even watching in the second half. This game, it might not have been aesthetically pleasing, but I was watching. I was into it. I cared. It was still a mystery who was going to win in the last couple minutes. So it wasn't the worst game. It wasn't the best game. Sometimes defensive football could be ugly football. I don't think either offense executed that well, especially the Rams. I thought Goff was really awful in that game. To call it a defensive classic, it's going a little overboard. I didn't think it was great offense necessarily, but it was a close game. It was a really, really competitive game. Both defenses did play very well, so I didn't mind it. It was fine. I'd rather have Philly, New England from the year before, of course, but this one was for everybody who complained back on that Monday night that, 54-51 football is garbage. I don't want this. This is terrible. Yeah. Well, I really hope you enjoyed this. Well, I hope that was your cup of tea, because, boy, you didn't get any points in that one.
Frank Schwab, must-read material, Yahoo Sports, Shutdown Corner. Frank, thank you as always, buddy. Get some rest. Spend some time with the family, buddy. They need you. They miss you.
Will do. I appreciate it, Jody.
All right, you take care. That's the Schwab. He's the best in the business. We'll take a timeout. Oh, he mentioned the Super Bowl. I'm going to throw a little hint on this day in sports history. It's coming up next. Oh, we remember this one. I promise. We remember this day. Next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever, as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Two minutes after the hour, wrapping things up, some quick headlines for you and yours. Former LSU Tiger Garrett Temple traded from the Memphis Grizzlies today to the Los Angeles Clippers. I'd rather be with Steve Ballmer than with the Memphis Grizzlies. I'm just saying. The most NFL combine invites by conference? Well, the Big 12 had 33, the Pac 12 had 39, the ACC 46, the Big Ten 53, and the big daddy of them all, the SEC, leading the way with 90. Alabama and Clemson had the most players invited to the NFL Combine with 11, Ohio State with 10, Georgia, Ole Miss, Washington with 9, Florida, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, Wisconsin with 8, Boston College, Penn State, Stanford with 7, Auburn, LSU, Miami, Michigan, Missouri, NC State, Utah, West Virginia with 6. All right. On this day in sports history, oh boy, February 7th, the year 2010, Sun Life Stadium, Miami, Florida. Oh, just listen. You remember this play.
Manning in the shotgun puts Colley in motion. Looks in his direction. It's picked off! It's picked off! It's Tracy Porter again! He's running free! He's going to go all the way! Hand outstretched! It is a safe touchdown! 70 yards on the return! 70 yards on the return by Porter! He did it to Favre, and now he's done it to Manning!
I'm going to tell you what, Tracy Porter knew that route was coming and jumped it. Peyton Manning threw it right to him. He was the only guy left out there to tackle Tracy Porter. Porter ducks to the inside. Got that big break when you needed it. Gosh almighty, how fortunate are the Saints to come up with those huge plays whenever they need it. We said that the Colts were a team that don't turn over the ball in crucial situations, but every now and then things like that will happen.
And the Saints go on to win it. Jim Henderson and the late, great Hokie Gajan. Super Bowl 44, 31-17. Pigs are flying. Hell has frozen over. The Saints are Super Bowl champs on this day, February 7th, the year 2010. I remember where I was, and I remember, I'm not ashamed to say it, crying like a little baby when the Saints did it. Could not believe it. Unbelievable season. Next year, Super Bowl 54, Sun Life Stadium, Miami. In the words of the late, great Yogi, deja vu all over again? Huh, we shall see. All right, if today, February 7th, is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. You share with quite a list of names today. Detroit Lion quarterback Matthew Stafford is 30. Oh, what a great basketball player he was. Two-time league MVP with the Phoenix Suns, Steve Nash, 44 years old today. Rookie of the year in the NFL, Saquon Barkley, 21 years old today. I just saw him play on TV, play a concert in South Bend in Notre Dame University's football stadium. Garth Brooks, 56. Chris Rock is 53. Ashton Kutcher is 40. So happy birthday to them, and happy birthday to all of you. If it's your anniversary today, man, happy anniversary. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. What a show we had today. Special thanks to Cody Worsham, digital media director for LSU, recapping LSU's scintillating overtime win over Mississippi State, 8-1 in league play and climbing the NCAA tournament bracket charts. Will Guillory, Anthony Davis, still a Pelican here and now. Nico Mirotic shipped to Milwaukee. Kevin Mawai, that was some kind of fun talking to the soon-to-be Yellow Jacket NFL Hall of Famer, a long way from Leesville, the Wampus Cats, all the way to the Hall of Fame. Amazing story. And the Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. CD, job well done as always. Hope all of you enjoyed it half as much as we did bring it to you. So thanks for listening, however you may have listened to us, on whatever device you do. And to our partners that make it possible each and every day, we greatly, greatly appreciate that. The Raging Cajuns trying to get back in the win column in hoops. We'll talk about that. LSU Auburn will preview that big basketball game. They're going to try and section off the Pete Maravich Assembly Center, purple and white, like they do on TV. So this section's all purple. This section's all white. So stay tuned. If you're going to the ball game, check and see where your tickets are and check and see what you're supposed to wear. That'd be pretty cool. Pretty cool. Purple and white across the board in Peach Palace. Yes, indeed. That and much, much more the Friday edition of the Jordy Helfrich Show. We have only one Thursday, February the 7th. Hope you have a great rest of your afternoon and even better evening. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, for CD, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.